Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Jim, let's start with the good, and some would say this is good on a number of fronts. Yesterday, we got the completely unsurprising news that Utah Republican Senator Orrin Hatch, who was first elected to the U.S. Senate in 1976, that's the same day Jimmy Carter beat Gerald Ford, has announced he will not be running for an eighth term to the U.S. Senate. It's actually been seven full terms almost for Orrin Hatch, but 42 years apparently is enough. Here's how he announced it yesterday.
Every good fighter knows when to hang up the gloves. And for me, that time is soon approaching. That's why, after much prayer and discussion with family and friends, I've decided to retire at the end of this term.
So Hatch is out as expected. Utah, obviously a deep red state. Jim, Hatch has done some very good things during his time in Congress. He just shepherded through tax reform, which a lot of people like. He's been a pit bull in some of the Judiciary Committee hearings. He stuck up very strongly for Clarence Thomas back during those contentious hearings in 1991. And he's also been a loyal Republican soldier along the way. He's also dabbled in some more liberal things that we've thrown up our hands up about over the years. So that's time to move on, probably. 42 years is more than enough when we don't particularly like career politicians. But the speculation now, of course, is that Mitt Romney will run to be the next senator from Utah. The media is absolutely enamored with this idea. They were frothing all over it all day yesterday. The fact that he changed his location for his Twitter account from Massachusetts to Utah sent the press corps into convulsions. Mitt Romney obviously would be a solid U.S. senator. He's in his 70s now, so not sure how many years you'll get out of him there. Quite frankly, I think it's possible to get somebody more conservative than him, but overall, Mitt Romney in the U.S. Senate would probably be a pretty good thing.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here, Greg. The first is, first of all, thank you, Senator Hatch. As you noted, when you've been in the Senate since 1977, January, pre the first Star Wars movie for perspective, it's worth noting that, like, you're going to do a lot of things that people are going to like, a lot of things people will not like. I think for most conservatives, Orrin Hatch has been usually a reliable vote, usually a very solid leader. He never embarrassed his state or his staff or his family or anything like that, scandal free. Then also I would point out, I remember he used to write songs, and I remember he wrote a song for Kennedy when he was sick. There's a sweetness to this man, that is, I think, worthy of saluting in addition to his, you know, longevity and his long work for the causes he believed in. So thank you, Senator Hatch, for your service. Also at age 83 and seven terms, it's kind of nice to not have to say, yeah, we don't care about term limits anymore. And we don't worry about age. Look, it's, you know, at age 83, he should be able to enjoy his golden years of retirement and, you know, make room for someone else to carry that on. And it says something about Utah, Greg, that their idea of a senatorial youth movement is 70-year-old Mitt Romney. I have great admiration for Mitt Romney. Depending on how long I live, there's a good chance he will be the guy I most wish had won the presidency of my lifetime. A thoroughly decent man, I think a guy who, if he had been elected in 2012, a lot of problems over the last 4 years, whether it's ISIS, whether it's the red line in Syria, the economic confidence and optimism we're seeing right now, I think we could have enjoyed a lot of this 4 years ago if Mitt Romney had been elected president. And also at a time when we're seeing so much bad behavior and personal scandals, he and his family are just seem to be the most swell, honorable, decent people you could possibly ever want to have in politics. So God bless them. And if he runs, I think Mitt Romney will be a really good senator. He certainly is bright enough. He's a great analyst of the issues. And I think he would make the Senate more focused on problem solving. This is not a man who's a verbal bomb thrower. This is not an incendiary person. This is a guy who's all about crunching the numbers and figuring out how to get the best solution and the best compromise that he can. No doubt, because of the way he denounced Trump in, I believe it was March of 2016, he will be seen as the voice of anti-Trump Republicans in the U.S. Senate. Now, maybe that's fine. Maybe Ben Sasse will feel like this is a certain amount of competition or something like that. One, I wonder if Utah wants its senator to be that. And secondly, look, I say this as a guy who really likes him. 70-year-old Mitt Romney is not the future of anti-Trump or non-Trump conservatism. I think, you know, maybe Sass or some other figure is that. Maybe Rubio, maybe, you know, somebody like Bobby Jindal, somebody who's been, Scott Walker, someone who's been outside of Washington for a while. I don't think that Mitt Romney is you know, the long-term answer. Great admiration for him. I think he would add a lot to the Senate. I think it's very safe to say that, you know, if any Republican is likely to win that seat, Mitt Romney would lock it up, and you can kind of take it to the bank now. The only other thing to think about is, and you know, I'd like Utah Republicans to give this some serious consideration. Greg, if you nominate Romney, and if he jumps in, most Republicans will lose interest in you know, running against him in the primary pretty quickly. Do you lose your chance for the next Mike Lee? Do you lose your chance for a rising star somewhere in Utah Republican politics who could do a more for a longer period of time? It's kind of like, you know, drafting the rookie versus going with, you know what, Greg, perhaps the perfect metaphor for this is Mitt Romney is the Josh McCown of Republican politics. Everybody likes him. He's very solid. He's very reliable. He generally does a pretty good job. But he very rarely can help you win the big one. And he's getting long in the tooth. It might be time for him to transition to coaching, so to speak.
That is a pretty good analogy. Or, yeah, if you're in a coaching search now, do you go with the young up-and-comer like a Sean McVay at the Rams? Or do you go with, you know, a Tom Coughlin type? Or re-sign Marvin Lewis? Who knows? Any of those things could be possible. But let's move on to the bad martini. And yesterday we used Donald Trump's Twitter account and his tweets about the protests in Iran as the good martini. Today, his Twitter account easily serves as the basis for our bad martini. This came at 4:49 p.m. Eastern Time on Tuesday in response to North Korean communist dictator Kim Jong-un saying he's got a nuclear button on his desk. Quote, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un just stated that the nuclear button is on his desk at all times. Will someone from his depleted and food-starved regime please inform him that I too have a nuclear button, but it is a much bigger and more powerful one than his, and my button works. Jim, this has been the fodder for many different jokes on Twitter. We won't get into those. But when it comes to projecting strength, President Trump has done a decent job at that over the past year. This sounds more like schoolyard taunting. And I don't think the liberals are correct in saying this is going to push us any further towards nuclear war, but it certainly is not responsible leadership, and it doesn't project strength in a good way. It makes him look stupid.
Yeah, I Mike Allen's newsletter over at Axios this morning quoted some anonymous, you know, outside advisor or wise man of Washington who said every war in history has begun by accident. And Greg, I don't think that's actually true. That doesn't line up with the way I've studied history. I've never heard about Nazis in 1939 saying, wait, how did we end up in Poland? You know, but there's no doubt that the North Korean regime is volatile. There's no doubt that the North Korean regime is erratic. We don't really understand the decision making of Fat Boy and the generals around him and things like that. We know that at times they have taken these random provocative actions like shelling South Korean islands or sinking their naval ships or things like that. So in this circumstance, I would like the president to kind of, you know, this is not the time to go full bombast. This is not the time to kind of, you know, turn it up to 11. There's obviously a Freudian implication when he says my button is bigger than yours. I just don't think this is the time and the place, Mr. President. And there, you know, yes, I know Reagan said a joke back in the 1980s where he said, I've just signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin the bombing in 5 minutes. Apparently, this was a joke. Everyone laughed, but apparently there was some worry that the Russians would hear this and freak out and launch their missiles or something like that. I don't think Trump's tweets are going to start nuclear war. And in fact, the people who do, I'd kind of like to see them get a deadline of when they think nuclear war will begin, because I don't think it's going to happen. But having said that, there's the benefit to this. Like, what does he get more Twitter followers out of it? Right? I think the president just vents. And this is one of those thoughts that he just probably shouldn't vent publicly to the world, because it really does seem like he's almost daring Kim Jong-un, and we just don't know how Kim Jong-un would react to something like that.
Venting. We'll be talking about that a little bit in the third martini as well. Jim, our crazy martini today was almost Lindsey Graham suggesting we should boycott the Winter Olympics in South Korea if the North Koreans show up to participate. Nikki Haley, the U.N. ambassador, has mentioned this in the past, that's up in the air, given the tensions on the Korean Peninsula right now and the nuclear saber-rattling from Kim Jong-un. But based on the Carter example from the Summer Olympics in 1980, that just projects weakness. I'm not sure why anyone is entertaining this idea. I certainly hope the administration doesn't do that. I don't think they're going to nuke South Korea when the entire world is there for the Olympics, and crushing them at various things in athletics would be a lot of fun. So I don't see what the downside of going to the Olympics would be.
Yeah, I would point out, Greg, that having been critical of Mike Huckabee earlier today on Twitter, I will give him credit for what was actually a genuinely funny joke, where he says that you really shouldn't count on many great Olympic athletes coming out of North Korea, because everybody who has run fast has either gotten out or been shot trying. You also made the observation that both Lindsey Graham and Nikki Haley both have indicated a possibility that the U.S. would not participate and wondered if it had something to do with South Carolina. I'll point out, Greg, you really don't see a lot of great downhill skiers coming out of South Carolina. You know, it's not exactly the winter sports mecca, although it's worth noting that they're apparently going to get snow. My parents have already been warned that apparently it could get up as 3 inches in Charleston, I'm being told. So be careful down there in South Carolina. Maybe this is where the great resurgence in South Carolinian Winter Olympic athletes begins. But my guess is that, no, the Winter Olympics are just not a great draw in South Carolina. No, it's a strange comment. I doubt we would bother to do that. We, you know, our attitude should be like, you know, whatever. If North Korea wants to participate, great. If they don't want to participate, fine. We don't. You know, we're going to do what we're going to do, which is go out, be excellent, win a lot of gold medals, and you know, celebrate our athletes' achievements. We're not going to, you know, alter what we do just because somebody else shows up to the party.
Amen. Amen. Thank you for clarifying that. And, you know, I'd like to poke fun at the South Carolinians for perhaps freaking out that they're about to get 3 inches of snow. But you know what happens in Washington when we get a dusting, which we might get tomorrow. And if that's the case, all panic will set in and the grocery store shelves will be barren. So I can't go there.
Exactly. I'll just make the observation, Greg. I've already heard that this morning in the you know, Northern Virginia and Washington, D.C. supermarkets, they've already cleared out all the available milk, bread and eggs. And I don't understand what this is, Greg, but apparently everyone makes French toast in snowstorms. Is that what all this stuff goes to? It's always those same three items. And I don't get, you know, like nobody needs coffee. Nobody wants any, you know, cold cuts. But anyway, that's the weather portion of today's 3 Martini Lunch.
That's right. All right, let's move on to the crazy martini. And we promised more venting, and venting you shall get. The Guardian today, the UK Guardian, has some interesting quotes from Steve Bannon, the former chief strategist in the Trump administration and the guy who was CEO of the Trump campaign over the final 3 months of the 2016 campaign. Donald Trump's former chief strategist, Steve Bannon, has described the Trump Tower meeting between the president's son and a group of Russians during the 2016 election campaign as treasonous and unpatriotic, according to an explosive new book seen by The Guardian. Bannon, speaking to author Michael Wolff, warned that the investigation into alleged collusion with the Kremlin will focus on money laundering and predicted, quote, they're going to crack Don Jr. like an egg on national TV. Further on, it says he is particularly scathing about the June 2016 meeting involving Trump's son Donald Jr., son-in-law Jared Kushner, then campaign chairman Paul Manafort, and Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya at Trump Tower in New York. A trusted intermediary had promised documents that would incriminate rival Hillary Clinton, but instead of alerting the FBI to a potential assault on American democracy by a foreign power, Trump Jr. replied in an email, I love it. Bannon's biggest head-scratcher here is, quote, the three senior guys in the campaign thought it was a good idea to meet with a foreign government inside Trump Tower in the conference room on the 25th floor with no lawyers. They didn't have any lawyers. Even if you thought that this was not treasonous or unpatriotic or bad stuff, and I happen to think it's all of that, you should have called the FBI immediately. Further on, he says, if you really wanted to have this meeting, have some lawyers do it at a Holiday Inn in Manchester, New Hampshire, and then any information could be dumped down to Breitbart or something like that, or maybe some other more legitimate publication. He runs Breitbart, by the way. So, Jim, a lot of score settling perhaps here, but it's interesting that he's making some of these comments and hanging some of his White House rivals out to dry here.
Yeah, it is worth noting that Steve Bannon has always disliked the Trump children. He apparently would make, you know, this was an open secret or not even all that well hidden. The rivalry he had with Jared Kushner, apparently he doesn't think particularly highly of Ivanka Trump, who certainly is considered, whether or not you think of her as a moderating influence or a centrist influence, it's safe to say she did not have the alt-right sympathies that that Bannon did. So the idea of Bannon having utter contempt for the Trump children by itself is not surprising. If you're a Breitbart reading make America great again, you know, red hat wearing diehard Trump fan, then this is a really surprising and unnerving turn of events, because two of your heroes are fighting with each other. This is Batman versus Superman. This is the president of the United States versus the guy who was pushing him in the direction you liked the most. And all of a sudden he's now and look, we've heard this kind of criticism before. Bannon had said something like that there was no military solution to North Korea. He's lamented that the Trump presidency, as we know it, is over when his departure. Some indications he didn't leave on the best of terms. But all in all, this is a you know, like to come out and basically say, I think the president's son committed treason. This is a whole new level. This is pretty darn incendiary. But there are a couple of folks on Twitter are saying, oh, Bannon would never say something like that. First of all, Greg, no one should ever say the words Steve Bannon would never say something like that, other than maybe please or thank you or other polite manners or things like that. This is the thing. Steve Bannon's capable of saying anything. Secondly, Michael Wolff's enough of a reliable reporter. I'd be very surprised if Wolff did not have a recording of these types of comments. These are not like paraphrasing descriptions. These are pretty specific quotes. It's in quotes. I don't find it terribly likely that Michael Wolff made up these comments. If it does, I'll be surprised and I'll retract everything I've said here, but I just don't buy that idea. I think this sounds very plausible that Bannon would say something like this. It's also worth noting that meeting with the Russians was before Bannon jumped on board the campaign formally. You can argue whether Breitbart.com was a, you know, de facto extension of the Trump campaign for a much longer period of time than before Bannon officially signed on to the campaign. People start wondering, has Bannon talked to Mueller? Is Bannon ready to turn on Trump completely? It's a very interesting thing. Those of us who have known about Steve Bannon for a long time are less than fully surprised that he would turn on Trump so vehemently and viciously. This is a matter of, you know, you pick your metaphor, two scorpions in a jar, two snakes biting each other's tails. You know, Trump and Bannon kind of fit each other. And it's unsurprising that two men who are both so, let's just say, egos, or, you know, who are either healthy or, depending on your definition, quite unhealthy, who do not enjoy dissent or disagreement, who do not enjoy potential rivals for power or influence, that these two would end up butting heads. And I, you know, if hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, then perhaps hell's next highest fury would be somebody like Steve Bannon when he feels scorned, because the president is closer to his children than he does to Bannon as an advisor. So I'm not totally stunned by this, but it'll be very interesting to see if Steve Bannon ends up becoming a you know, increasingly vociferous critic of Trump, or whether it focuses mostly on his family. There were some people on Twitter who are not particularly well connected who said, oh, Steve Bannon should run for that Senate seat out in Utah. Now, that would make the interesting turn of events, Greg. In a race between Mitt Romney and Steve Bannon, Greg, who's the bigger critic of Trump?
That would be Romney.
But Romney's not accused his son of treason, right?
Well, here's my question. The establishment, if we want to use that term, traditional Republicans already loathe Steve Bannon. Now he's calling the president's oldest son treasonous. So I'm guessing that's not going to sit too well in Trump land. So if he loses the support of the Trump crowd, what's he got left?
He's off on that island. When you don't have a surplus of friends, you kind of try not to burn any bridges. But man, I think there is an arsonist impulse in Bannon that cannot be controlled, and that a outcome like this is less than shocking.
Wonder if we'll get some tweets on that as the days go forward. Jim, have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.